Recordings are started.
Thank you. All right, this is the 39th meeting of the CWG, and we will do attendance in Adobe Connect. I have Sean on the phone line only. Is anyone else only on the phone line? Nope. Okay. Well, turning it over to the chairs.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Grace. Welcome back from Lisa and myself. I know this is proving to be a marathon session. We're on call 5 out of 6, if those of you who are counting. We hope to make some further good progress here. As you know, we've dealt with some significant issues with the design teams. And here we're going to turn our attention back onto what we've been calling the structural issues. Those key elements of organization of the post-transition entity for which we have relied in part and quite heavily on the input of the independent advice we've received from Sibby Austin. The cue sheet for this is in many ways the punch list that we touched, that we dealt with yesterday in running through in a lot of detail with Sharon on primarily Sharon from Sibby Austin in our call meeting 37, where we reviewed in detail the memorandum of April 4th and the subsequent punch list from a week later, which arose out of the CWG's processing and questioning of the detail on that memorandum. As I said to you yesterday and we discussed, there are issues with the order of that punch list. It doesn't necessarily represent the most logical way in which to deal with the order of questions. So there's certainly, in going through that, we should not necessarily deal with it in chronological and alphabetical order. But it does represent a very good aide memoir as to what some of the key issues we need to deal with are. In dealing with structural issues, it seems that the overarching question is almost certainly that which is referred to in item 9, and that is to do with which variant will be recommended. Now, reminding you that in Istanbul, we essentially made a series of compromises, and again, reminding you of the spirit in which we did that, and that was a willingness on behalf of the group, having sat face to face, which is always helps with these things, to try and come together and accept that no solution was going to be absolutely meet all of the requirements of any given individual or entity, or it was extremely unlikely. And there was a very good spirit of compromise which agreed to set aside key variants of the model and focus our and our advisors' attention on two variants of the internal model referred to as internal and internal hybrid from memory. But essentially those dealt with variations of an internal model which had legal and structural separation. So in dealing with that, we agreed to focus in on those two variants. And I do note that on the list in the last few hours, and Lisa and I have talked about this in some detail, that on the list in the past few hours, there's been the emergence of a so-called, what's the name of it, Lisa?
A reverse hybrid model.
And this, there's been some sensible points made on that, Well, for one, we agreed we wouldn't kill or remove entirely any specific models, but we also agreed that if we were going to get to an endpoint, we really needed to focus our attention in on a limited subset. So I think certainly Lisa and I have discussed the fact that for the present, we should not get involved in a detailed discussion on the reverse hybrid that's been introduced. Nevertheless, as one or more participants contributed on list, there may well be some valuable components of that can be woven into our work. Notwithstanding that, we only really know that once we've made some more progress on where we go with the variants that we chose to focus in on. And if indeed, when we make that more progress, the critical questions or issues remain unanswered or undealt with, it may well be that we can then say, well, is there something we can take from one or other of the models that we've set aside? But I must remind you that of two things. First of all, we have to try and get to an end point, and whenever we reintroduce an issue, we run the risk of bringing out various complications that go into it, and frankly of some members saying, well, if you're going to reintroduce that, I'm going to reintroduce this, which I graciously set aside in my view. So they just have to remind you of the need to try and converge our thinking rather than produce divergent options. Thank you. So there's a couple of comments that appear to support that, and let's tease this out in a little more detail. So really the primary point in thinking about a structure of how to process the punch list, and talking this through with Lisa, we felt that the logical way to deal with this was first of all to deal with the overarching point of question 9, because some points naturally follow from that. We will be able to touch on elements, and some of the elements of the punch list we've dealt with via the design teams. And so we have a certain order that feels right to us to deal with, and I'll try and walk us through that order, and I hope that the story that emerges from walking through that makes sense. Certainly, it's question 9 deals with which variant, legal or functional separation. It seems to me, and in discussion with Lisa, to us that we work through 2, 4, and 8 at a very high level and cover off elements of those. And 2, 4, and 8 are really the periodic review functions group, the PRF. Or 4 is the ICANN board, and 8 is the triggers. Now, really why I say high level is because in order to deal with any form of separation, which inevitably we'll have to start to think about, we need to be sure that there is at least one mechanism by which that could happen, and that is touched on by 2. In other words, an output of the periodic review, which goes to the board in the current flow, and then that touches on triggers. But really, the primary focus I'd like to go into, first of all, is Matthew asks if the document could be put on the screen. And yes, we can. Let's put that up now. The reason I'm hesitant to put it up is because I'll be absolutely frank with you. If we went through it systematically, there's a series in the current order in which it's in. We could potentially go down all sorts of rat holes, which may not be necessarily productive to making progress on the overall thing. I'm not comfortable with the order, as I've said a couple of times. So we'll put it up, but please let's recognize that we're going to, it's unsynced, as Grace said. So when we make reference to points, you can yourself go to them. So let's go, first of all, to item 9, which deals with the variant which will be recommended, legal or functional separation. Now, I have a sense of where I think the group is going on this, and my feel is, and I'm going to go out on a limb on this and say that my sense is that there is a movement within the group towards the legal separation model, and I'd like you to either agree with that or challenge that if you disagree with that, bearing in mind that we need to try and settle on that overarching point before we can go into some more detail. And there's a couple of comments that have immediately shot up, including from Chris saying that in principle he's happy to go with, depending on the structure of that, and Brendan acknowledging that that was his sense of the call, as does Matthew. But let me deal with the hands in the queue for their comments. So that's first of all Chuck, and then he'll be followed by Alan. Chuck, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. One of the things I picked up, and I put it in the chat in our call earlier today, is that the issue of a contract keeps coming up as having quite a lot of very important value. And so that, with that in mind, and if my assessment is correct, that to me is a critical element of the legal separation versus the just the functional separation. And I'll leave it at that.
Well, Chuck, that's a very good point. And conditional on where we end up in this discussion, I would expect that that's the next substantial discussion we have, which is in and around item 6 on the punch list. But I won't go there yet because it's clear that there's some more discussion to be had, first of all, on item 9. So over to you, Alan.
Thank you very much. I'll prefix my comments saying I unfortunately had to miss a good part of the discussion with the lawyers yesterday. So I don't, and I haven't had a chance since to listen to the MP3 or read a transcript. One of the main differences from my perspective was earlier discussions we had that legal separation might provide significantly better protection from ICANN's bankruptcy if we legally separated. So I guess I have a question. Did that come up in the discussions yesterday, and is that still relevant, or is it now not a particularly relevant decision point in this discussion?
Alan, it did not come up specifically yesterday as far as I recall, but I know Sharon from Sidley is online, and I think we covered this in Istanbul. We certainly touched on it a couple of times, so I don't know if Sharon, you would like to respond in any sense to Alan's point here.
Sure. Yeah, let me go ahead and do that. So we didn't, as you said, we didn't talk about it on yesterday's call. We did discuss it in our memo from April 4th. The distinction is that if we have a separate legal entity, then if there is ever a bankruptcy event at ICANN, it doesn't automatically throw the IANA entity into bankruptcy with it because there is a separation there. Now, ICANN's interest in the IANA entity could become part of a bankruptcy estate, but it doesn't automatically become a bankrupt entity just because ICANN may go into bankruptcy either voluntarily or involuntarily.
Yeah, and my recollection, if I may interject, my recollection was it was unclear how the dust would settle, whether it would be treated as an asset or left completely alone.
Alan, that's correct.
Yeah, okay.
So potentially subject to further work, but indications are better protection from a legally separate entity.
But probably no guarantee until the actual event happened and we saw what courts decided or what various people decided. Thank you.
Chris, just noting your point on structure, noting Guru's point on a poll, and I think it would be quite helpful to take a poll after a little more discussion. This is really tricky, what you push down further in the discussion, what you have up front. I think the discussion that Lisa and I had was that we felt that the advice we've received is that ultimately LLC or not-profit could work, and we feel it's important to get the decision in and around legal or not, and then some of the other key points under our belt first. And indeed, it may even be that this is something which goes out unresolved in the public comment, because this is a detail point. But we can come back to that if you feel strongly that we need to, but that's where we're at the moment. Olivier?
Thank you, Jonathan. Olivier Capon of Blanc speaking. And my question, and I know it's been asked before, I just want to be clear on this. So if we have a legal separation, as we've just heard now, there would be some kind of protection from bankruptcy of ICANN, or at least it might not be affected in some cases. would there be the possibility of suing that entity separately from ICANN? Just want to make sure I got this one right or not.
Yeah, and Sharon's put her hand up in response, so let's hear the response.
Yes, there would be. If there is a separate legal entity, then that is an entity that can be sued. Presumably, whatever the cause of action is will drive a lawsuit either against ICANN or if there's an entity to the subsidiary. But you're correct, it is a different entity and could be sued separately.
Right, and just as a follow-up then, if I may, please.
Go ahead, Olivia.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. As a follow-up, could ICANN sue that entity?
Yes,
ICANN
could sue that entity unless we constrain that in some way. So if they are, for example, parties to a contract, each party could, theoretically, unless we take the right away, each party could have recourse to sue the other party for a failure to perform.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Olivia. Thanks, Sharon. One of the things I intend to come back to Sidley on, depending on where we go, but is to, before we close this off completely, is to have I think it's worth a kind of classic risk warning. These are the issues, and Olivia, you've helpfully highlighted one that we should be at least aware of. Of course, there's, with most of these things, there's a risk in both directions. Eduardo?
Thank you. This is Eduardo. I just want to go back to the question about legal separation model and the functional separation model. On the perspective of complexity versus simplicity, I believe the internet functional separation would be, in my mind, more simple to propose. Mostly because in the legal separation, we'll have things like another governance body that we have to deal with. Thank you.
I understand the point, and Eduardo, at face value, it would seem simpler, but whenever we've used this point simpler on the email and so on, it seems to be a relatively inflammatory point in that it seems that it's not necessarily agreed that any given structure is simpler. The minute somebody advocates that one solution is simpler, there's always someone else pointing out a variation. Sean.
Hey, Sean. Hello?
Hi, Sean. We can kind of hear you. Go ahead and talk, Sean, and we'll confirm that whether you hear you accurately or not.
Yeah, I'm actually talking. Can you hear me?
Sean, we hear you.
Oh, good. Thank you. This is Sean for the record. I just want to get some clarification on the ICANN going bankrupt and the legal situation. So Sidney, you're saying in order to secure HANA, it's better to go the legal option in case there's a situation whereby ICANN goes bankrupt. Is that what you're saying? And if, considering that HANA is actually a set of functions, so you're assuming that the current source, which we all know that is ICANN, source of funding, we all know that is ICANN, you're assuming that if that organization goes bankrupt, illegal process is what will enable the function to continue. I'd like to get some clarification about that because I know that if organizations go bankrupt, there is usually it's like having a set of ways, I mean, process by which their activities can be transferred or taken over, can actually also make that thing happen. So I'm thinking if I can go bankrupt, which is something that may probably not happen, wouldn't it just be that we just indicate in text the process by which the HANA gets transferred to another operator? Does it really need to have legal separation involved in that sense? Thank you.
Sean, this audio was a little bit indistinct there, so I'm hoping that Sharon managed to get that. But essentially, let me hand over to Sharon and see if you were able to get the gist of that, Sharon.
Thanks, Jonathan. I think I've got the gist of it. I think the first question is do we think it's a better legal option to have legal separation from a bankruptcy standpoint if ICANN were to go bankrupt? And the answer to that is yes, we do. Obviously, if there's an ICANN bankruptcy, that is a very serious, significant problem, regardless of the structure. But there is a marginal benefit if there's legal separation. At least the IANA entity isn't automatically part of the bankruptcy proceeding. Now, if ICANN were to go into bankruptcy, or for that matter, if the IANA entity were to go into bankruptcy, there is a lot of power of a trustee in bankruptcy, at least in the United States. And one of the powers of a trustee in bankruptcy is to take a contract and decide whether to reject the contract or to assume the contract or do both, reject in part and assume in part. So if there were a bankruptcy event of either ICANN or the IANA entity, if we have legal separation, there will be a question about whether the contract will be maintained because there is the power of a court in bankruptcy to reject the contract.
Thanks, Sharon. Chris?
Jonathan, thank you. I'm conscious that you're not keen, and I understand why, for sort of, to and fro. But if it's all right with you, I have a couple of sort of questions which I think require me to ask the question, have Sharon respond, and then me respond. So I'll try. I don't want to monopolize things, but I do want to try and get to a particular point. Sharon, is it correct that the point you made about a not-for-profit not being owned by ICANN, that there is a difference in respect to an LLC? In other words, if it's an LLC, is that effectively what I would consider to be a real subsidiary, whereas in respect to a non-profit, it would be more just ICANN as the sole member?
Chris, that's right. I think if it were an LLC, there would be ownership in the sense that we think of equity ownership as opposed to simply control. And so if it's a nonprofit corporation, there's no ownership, there's no equity ownership, but there is control. So that would be a distinction.
Right, and that would mean that ICANN could not then sue its own subsidiary, would it?
I'm not sure if that's right. I think it would be very odd and unusual for related companies to sue one another, but I don't know that there's any legal reason they couldn't. I'm not aware of any case law that says they can't. It would be very unusual.
Right. So what my question then would be, what would you see as being the advantages to the affiliate model being a non-profit rather than an LLC, and what would you see as the disadvantages, given that we are going to have to at some point make that decision if we follow this model?
Jonathan, you want me to take that one?
Yes, go ahead. I mean, it is something that, as I say, I'd like to keep not get too involved in now because we haven't yet even made the decision.
John, I'm happy to reserve that question. We don't have to deal with it now. It was just that we were talking about it, so I've raised it. But I'm more than happy for you to put it to one side as long as we put it in the car park and get back to it.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely on the list. And I noticed that Josh has put his hand up, and including flagging the issue of the manner of funding. So, Josh, if you weren't going to deal with funding, it'd be great if you could deal with whatever question or point you had and also perhaps make some remarks as to how we might secure the funding both via contract if we're talking about a legally separated entity. Any remarks or points you could make? So I note in the chat that Josh has made the point of the manner of funding would be something that requires further consideration, and moreover, that the prior memo did discuss the advantages and disadvantages of LLC versus non-profit, so that's something we could usefully refer back to as well.
Yeah, Jonathan, sorry, I was on mute. Did you want me to make any comment about the funding piece or no?
I think it would be helpful if you could just indicate, you know, perhaps if there's any, in particular, if there's perhaps either how, any comment on how funding, you know, what shaped the funding discussion, point one, and point two, if there's any significant difference in, you know, protection and stability with a legally separated, or, you know, any advantages to legally separated versus not legally separated.
Okay, sure. Well, so, and the funding question is something that Sharon and I had been discussing as well, and I don't think it's a settled issue by any means. I point it up because I think the parties, or the working group, will need to consider how the budget for IANA, if it's a separate legal entity, is developed. You know, presumably, you know, it would become the company that is entering into sort of downstream agreements with VeriSign or other root zone administrators, and so it could potentially peel off, you know, if you will, some of the funding or its revenue from some of the revenue that ICANN was receiving, so that there was direct, you know, privity there between the subsidiary and other third parties, or it could be something that the money flows into ICANN and then is allocated via budget allocation to, you know, the IANA sub. So I think that, you know, we raise it to make the point that as a sort of a process detail, it's something that needs to be considered and worked out. And I think it was to Chris's question, it's one of the reasons, you know, a dispute over funding, over fee, or over fees, or one party retaining fees versus the other could give rise to, you know, some sort of lawsuit over damages or some action in that regard. So that's just a comment on the funding piece. The advantages and disadvantages, as we said, we did go into some of those in the memo. One advantage of the LLC is that it would not need to reapply for tax-exempt funding status. It would be able to rely on the nonprofit public benefit corps number, so it would be able to rely on ICANN's established exempt status and would not have to obtain its own. So that, you know, we consider to be an advantage just because you avoid the unpredictability of that process, which, although the ministerial process, is still has the potential for an unpredictable result because you're dealing with the IRS. There are other things that can be, you know, considered around governance, but I'm just pointing that out. Let me just point that out as one example, and I'll lower my hand at that point.
Thanks, Josh. That's helpful, and that's useful. I wonder if there are other questions or comments in relation to Chris, your point on staff transferring or losing any benefit. This was covered off in an earlier conversation, in fact, where the understanding was that, in essence, the transfer of obligations or benefits could be made to the subsidiary. I think that was answered previously. Giving time for questions in the chat. I'm happy that we could put the poll up at this point and get an indication of where the group is at. We could have just asked for non-objections, but the poll gives us an opportunity for people to be anonymous, which of course isn't transparent, but might give confidence and ability to confidently express where others might feel less confident to do so in the chat or on audio. I think it could be useful, and I don't think that will. Let's see where the group's at in terms of legal subsidiary or functional separation and get a flavor of where that's at as far as the group is concerned via poll. And just for the record, just to let the group know, the chairs will not participate in this poll, so we will not be, and I expect that the same will be said of the professional advisors and staff. Grace, go ahead.
Jonathan, so can you, the question I have right now for the poll is which variant would you prefer, and then the question being functional separation, legal?
Legal or functional separation.
Okay.
9 from the Sidley memo. Which variant is preferred, legal or functional separation?
Okay.
Chris makes the point that he's fine to poll as long as it's clear it depends on the structure to be discussed. Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, the structure is legal or functional separation, but then the devil is in the detail, and so it's clear that we will go through that detail, and that ultimately, having gone through that detail, we will flesh out many other elements of that are captured within the Sidley memo. So, the Sidley punch list. Thanks, Chris. Alan?
Thank you. Chris's comment, I think, raises the issue of, for those of us for whom the devil is in the details, it's not clear which way we should vote. To, clearly, if everyone votes saying, if you might consider legal separation, then tick off that box. If legal separation doesn't win, given that most favorable view of it, then clearly it's off the table. But if people are randomly going to pick one or the other because they're not sure how the detailed discussion will go out, I'm not sure the poll will tell us anything.
I think the key point here, Alan, that's a good point, but the key point here is if we don't split the discussion at this point and go into one variant in detail, every time we try and answer a question, it potentially says it depends on which model. So we kind of have to go keep driving down a route, and it may be that you would change your mind later or advocate for a variation to that variant. But sooner or later, we have to deal with the detail, and that's now, I think. And so in order to deal with the detail, this is the overarching question. So I think it's with that in mind that we have to make some form of split between these two variants that we've ended up with and had on the table for quite some time and had quite some additional discussion, external input, and so on.
Jonathan, I would suggest we say legal separation, presuming the details are done to your satisfaction.
I think that's given and it's on record. So it's not visible what the variant is preferred, so we're going to hold off for a minute, and I encourage you to cast your position in the poll, and then we will close the poll and display the results. The idea being to not influence the outcome by demonstrating the point dynamically. So let's hold it open for another 60 seconds, give you an opportunity to make a position in the poll, and then we will close it. So please, if you haven't put a position in the poll now, which should be very simple in front of you, just click on either no vote, functional, or legal separation. That's the point.
Jonathan, it's Olivier. May I just jump in?
Olivier, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much, Jonathan. I'm just concerned here with the poll that we have here. Maybe could I suggest that we have four choices here: legal separation, functional separation, undecided, and no vote. Because at the moment, the no vote is effectively anyone who hasn't made a voted on this, and of course, as you said, you will not be voting, and others on the call will not be voted. So that will, yeah, but it's better to see of those that are voting what we're getting for undecided. Thanks very much.
So with that change, it is very important that you understand, all participants, please note, you need to re-enter your choice now. This is effectively a new poll, so please re-enter your choice, whether you have a clear preference for legal separation, subject to all the detail being ironed out, a clear preference to functional separation, subject to the detail being ironed out, or you remain undecided, and in fact, I think the no vote is primarily intended to cover a position for participants who are either staff, chairs, or professional advisors. But should you feel that you would like to make a no vote, I don't think you're prohibited from doing so. Yeah, and I think Chuck's point is a good one, which is, let's not overanalyze this. Let's try and get some direction for the group and move down that direction and see, when we flush that out, whether that remains concerns or whether it starts to build on a convergence of views. Right, so we'll give a minute of open poll from now. Please cast your vote right away, and then we'll close the poll display the result.
Excuse me, Jonathan. Mark asks, is this for members only or all members and participants?
I think it's everyone on the call at present. It's really to get a direction from the group, and we are not specifically excluding participants.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to close the poll now and display the outcome. And there you get a sense of a pretty clear sense of direction in that there is a direction in the sense of legal separation, but it's quite clear that there are quite a few who are undecided, and perhaps that's not surprising. So I would like to take this as direction to now pursue the detail of this legal separation route, and go on now to understand what the impacts are on some of the further detail in the punch list. So if we could remove the poll. Alan, is that a new hand that you'd like to talk with?
Sorry, I don't know why it's up or how it got up.
All right, so once we have this sense of direction on there, Eduardo, go ahead.
Yes, Jonathan, this is Eduardo. If I look at the poll, there is about, you know, half, there is a functional separation and there's some people undecided. If you take both, it's like half, 50% of the people, you know, once they you know, there is there's not a clear direction there. But so, you know, if we're going to do this poll, we should go with legal separation or functional separation and deal with that. And then we have a really clear direction which way we should go. Thank you.
Eduardo, I mean, that's what we had, and Olivier argued for why we should give the option for some to be undecided, which is why we created that supplement.
Jonathan, I understand that. It's just what does that mean? I mean, we're going to take one direction now, and you are undecided. Does that mean that at the end you will not support that direction? That's my point.
We have to get some... I'm not sure I understand. I mean, we have to get some sense of direction. There is... we had around 56% supporting pursuit of legal separation. We had around 21-22% supporting functional separation, and 21-22 undecided. What I suggest we do is go further down the detail on the legal separation, and then we can reassess at that point.
Okay, thank you so much, Jonathan.
Thank you, Eduardo. So when we look at this, you've got this legally, assuming you've gone down the route of this legally separated entity, you've then got a question of, in the event of some form of final separation, you've got to say, well, what might be the trigger for that? How might the board react to such a trigger? And are there any other triggers for such an event? Well, we know from our work yesterday that one such trigger might be a recommendation from the periodic review team. Should they make such a trigger as it's currently constructed, that would be referred to the board. And we would then have the question is, should there be any other triggers? Are there any other triggers? And how would such a separation be implemented? If you look at the document, that those are really the where there's a lot of detail gone into in sections 2, periodic review function, section 4, the board, and some of the issues there, and indeed on section 8, which essentially looks at triggers and implementation. What I'd like to do is just ask, take a hypothetical scenario, because I think really where we want to go into some detail is now envisage that the contract is in place, and really look at number 6 in some detail is the next point I'd like to go to. But prior to going to 6, to just understand from Sidley, perhaps Sharon, you could comment on, assuming we had a trigger from the recommendation from a periodic review function on separation, how the board might how that might cascade through the board and to the point where implementation details had to be dealt with, and then I think we'll go on to 6 for detailed discussion by the group.
Thanks, Jonathan. This is Sharon. So, in terms of just taking that example of the periodic review function, so if we have a periodic review function reviewing the IANA functions and then coming back with some recommendations, something needs to be changed, whether there's an issue on renewal of the contract or there's some kind of operational issue, and so the periodic review function would report up to the ICANN board and would make recommendations. And then the ICANN board has to make a decision. Will it accept the recommendations of the periodic review function? Will it modify the recommendations? Or will it reject the recommendations? Now, if it's the first example where the ICANN board just accepts the recommendations, that's sort of the end of the process. There's been a recommendation that the ICANN board agrees, it will be implemented, and there's resolution. If instead the ICANN board decides to modify the recommendation or reject it altogether, then that would be, in this model, that would be a scenario where that decision to modify or reject would go up to the multi-stakeholder community, that empowered member group that the CCWG is working on, and that group would have some ability to veto the decision of the board, and then send it back down if there was disagreement as to how the ICANN board handled the recommendation of the periodic review function. So that's that ultimately that could be, the recommendation could be anything, right? The recommendation could be don't renew the contract or, you know, divest of the IANA entity to a new entity. It could be a whole host of different scenarios. But the idea is that ultimately it's going through the ICANN board and then up to the multi-stakeholder community to pass on yay or nay. Is that something that the community would agree with?
Thanks, Sharon. And that's clearly all subject to the detailed work of the CCWG. So I'd like to direct us to look at Section 6 now of your punch list, of the Sidley Austin punch list. Before that, I see your hand is up, Chris, so I'll come to you.
Yeah, it's about that, so whenever you're ready.
Okay, great. So it feels, if you note, 6 says, accountability on ICANN PTI contract, in brackets, if legal separation. So taking that direction of preference to go down this, the legal separation, we absolutely have to then unpack some of these issues. Now, Chris, you had a question. Sidley may want to remark, and I'm sure the group might want to come in on this. Highlight 6A is how do we address what is required through the contract, and how do we address what's required potentially through PRF and or CSC. So let's go to you, Chris, then to Sidley, and then open it up to the group.
Thank you, Jonathan. I have a sort of suggestion to try and deal with this point. So it seems to me that there are two ways that you would trigger the divestiture mechanism. I'm not saying there necessarily aren't any others, but certainly two that I can think of. One is, as you have already said, if the review team, be it the 5-yearly review or a review that happens in between those 5 years because of some emergency mechanism, recommends that the function be moved somewhere else, or if the CSC, after going through its escalation mechanisms, were also to recommend that the function be moved somewhere else, there would then be a process by which the constituent parts of ICANN would take that recommendation and vote on it. And we've discussed this to some extent and talked about whether it would be, you know, a supermajority of the SOs and ACs or whatever, but that's a detail. But let's assume for the moment that either the review body or the CSC has got to a point where it has decided that it wants to recommend that there should be a divestiture of the function. It would make that recommendation. There would then be a process under which the SOs and ACs would agree, vote, etc., to do that. At that point, it seems to me that one would be able to craft a fundamental bylaw that said, in the event that X percent of the SOs and ACs, whatever we agree, vote to divest ICANN of the IANA function, the board is required to do so, and that there is a process by which that occurs. And in the unlikely event that the board were to refuse to obey the fundamental bylaw, then one is spun into the overarching CCWG accountability mechanism that enables the community to spill the board and replace them with a board that is actually going to do what the bylaws say the board should do.
But Chris, I think that I understood that to be a description of an understanding rather than a question. I have, I think, a similar
I was hoping to provide some colour and depth to the discussion on how this might work within number 6 that you got up on the screen, Jonathan.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. And I confirm that what you described is consistent with what I understand to be the case at this stage. And the reason for moving over some of the other points covered in 2 and 8, which is triggers and implementation, is to say, well, we know we've got at least one. You highlighted potentially 2 triggers. So there may be others that we flesh out as we go back and deal with the triggers at some but for the moment, we know we have the potential triggers. We know how we have the potential for separation in extremis. And so now it's a question of what is this, the what is covered in the contract, assuming we've gone down this legal separation route. Sharon, would you like to make any additional remarks or remarks in supplement to what Chris has said about how the kind of scope of the contract, the kind of things that might be included there, and the issues the group should be thinking about in and around 6?
Yeah, sure. Let me just comment on Chris's recap, and I agree with Chris what you described. I think the only, and it's probably more of a detail, the only detail is the SOAC approval mechanism. At least I heard you describing that as separate from the ultimate CCWG mechanism, and the only point I would make there is that I think at least potentially those could be one and the same, right? That would be the multi-stakeholder community having a say at some point. So you could go through another process, so periodic review function, then SOs, ACs, then, you know, ultimate accountability, or you could just roll up the second and third into one step. But that's probably more of a detail. Let me pause and just see if there's response to that. Okay. So in terms of the contract, so number 6 on the punch list, if there's legal separation, then there is a contract, and I think that's one of the advantages that the group's been discussing of the legal separation is the ability to have a contract between ICANN and the IANA entity. And so one question is, how are the two parties held accountable to performance under that contract? And so one obvious choice is through the contract, and that's what contracts do. Contracts outline the rights and obligations of parties, and if the parties don't perform, the contract sets forth a set of mechanisms to address that, whether it's a process to deal with a breach and a remediation, or it's the ability to potentially have recourse in the courts, although, as we talked about, that would be, I think, probably an unusual outcome if there actually needed to be litigation between the parties. I think more likely it would be a mechanism of breach and resolution remediation. So the contract itself can be the vehicle for the accountability. So we talked earlier today about the transition plan on one of the design team works and how that could be part of the contract itself. So the contract could be the place. There is also, though, the possibility that the periodic review function or the CSC is the place that where there's accountability, and that those two groups could be also evaluating performance under the contract, and so that you wouldn't need to actually have ICANN or PTI trying to enforce or sue to enforce the contract, but rather the two groups are reviewing and providing feedback and dealing with it through that mechanism. So I think there's two ways, and you could theoretically do both for different types of issues. And then the contract itself, obviously that needs to be something that is fleshed out in more detail, and terms, some kind of term sheet or heads of terms would need to be decided upon. And lots of things to think about there, but, you know, think about one example of an item to consider is what's the term of the contract and how does it renew? So you can envision a scenario where the contract maybe has an auto-renewal provision, and it just renews automatically every X number of years. And that renewal could be coterminous with the periodic review cycle, so potentially every 5 years, for example. You could provide that it's automatic on the part of PTI, so PTI it automatically renews each time, and that the discretion is with ICANN. The benefit there would be that if we want to keep a PTI function kind of to a minimum, keep it more legal and administrative, but keep the accountability up at the ICANN level, then that would maybe argue that the contract would give less flexibility for PTI to terminate, more flexibility at the ICANN level to terminate, but obviously that decision is subject to all of the accountability mechanisms that are being discussed. So I'll stop there.
Thanks, Sharon. And you raise a very good point there, because if there's a sort of linkage, it seems to me, that if you open up discretion at the PTI level, you have to open up accountability at the PTI level. So you may argue that it is critical to have effective accountability at the ICANN level, and that's the community recourse, regardless of the issue. Are there questions or comments or points? I mean, there's Donna's point about the contract and who gets to decide that contract. I think that will be very important to flesh out at some point. If we go down this route, it'll be at minimum at a heads of terms level, subject to detailed negotiation. And clearly, that links into things like the CSC, because the contract will need to encompass a commitment to meet that will be the device by which the service level expectations will be turned into service level agreements, which I'm just speculating here, but I expect those will become an annex to the contract that could be updated from time to time. I realize people are tired, and it'd be good if there are any other questions or issues in and around item six, and what the scope of what could be addressed through the contract. If you feel there are particular issues, or you'd like to be explained what you think could be covered, there's some obviously healthy discussion going on in the chat. And it's an interesting point about who would have oversight and sign off, even though it's a wholly owned subsidiary contracting with its parent entity. There's a question of who would have sign off on that those key contract terms. Sharon, go ahead.
Yeah, I think on that question, I think on who decides on the renewal, and again, these are all variables. You could do it a lot of different ways. But if the decision is to keep the PTI structure as lean as possible, and so you say, well, that's an automatic renewal, then the decision is being made to renew really at the ICANN level, and that I think could dovetail in with the periodic review function. And so that's why I was saying, you know, maybe the review function and the term of the contract are the same every 5 years or whatever it is. And that then allows the periodic review function, a multi-stakeholder body, to make a recommendation to ICANN: we think you should renew the contract, or no, we think you should let it lapse and do an RFP. And then that decision by the ICANN board ultimately is vetted through the multi-stakeholder community of sitting above whatever that ultimate CCWG group is, can say, yes, we agree with the ICANN board, it should be renewed, or we disagree, or we think an RFP should occur.
That's a really interesting point, Sharon, and I must say it at face value, and it has an elegance of having a sort of continuity, but yet it's not so continuous that it can't be interrupted when there are points of serious concern. So it's an interesting point. Olivier?
Thank you, Jonathan. Olivier Capon of Law speaking. And with the accountability process being within ICANN and not with the PTI, or in fact in either way, or if it was through the PRF or CSC. If ICANN was to go rogue, how would that affect the PTI?
Who are you addressing that point to, Olivia? And it might be an example of what you mean by go rogue.
that's an interesting one. No specifics on ICANN going rogue. I mean, for if whatever reason ICANN goes rogue, I don't know, the directors decides to go and a worldwide holiday somewhere and decide that at the end of the day, running the DNS is not something that they're interested in. I don't know, some whatever you can think of ICANN going rogue as, but I'm just saying if the ICANN board and ICANN was to go rogue, how would that affect the PTI itself, since there appears to be a contract there, but if the only thing is the accountability is through the contract, then would that mean that you might have the PTI also being subjected to not having any accountability measures? I don't know. I'm just thinking aloud here, and so my question was aimed at Sharon.
Okay, so thanks, Olivia. Sharon and Josh have both put their hands up, so I'll leave them to respond in that order unless there's a difference. So Sharon, go ahead, and then or Josh, I see your hand. Sharon, did you drop your hand in order?
No, I only dropped it in anticipation of you turning it over to me. So.
Okay, go ahead.
So, yeah, in terms of the scenario of the ICANN goes rogue, I think that can be addressed through the accountability mechanisms at the ICANN level. In particular, the ability to, if it's adopted, the ability to recall the board. So, if there comes a time when ICANN is not operating to the satisfaction of the community, the ability to recall the directors and put in place directors who understand the mission and will support what the community believes is important to ICANN, that can be remedied in that way through the board recall mechanism. And then, of course, the contract could have mechanisms. It would have rights and obligations, and if PTI is not getting what it bargained for from ICANN, could invoke a breach and potentially also bring some kind of suit if there weren't an adequate remedy.
Thanks, Sharon. Josh?
So I think there also had been some, in our memo, we had included some notes on the governance of PTI, and although we were envisioning that it would have as its ICANN as its sole member, whether it was a nonprofit corp or an LLC, that the governance of PTI, the organizational documents for PTI would provide that the board had some independence, and so that ICANN couldn't, through its member status, control the activities of PTI. And this is something that helps sort of preserve kind of stability by having a separate legal entity, because you bring some independent oversight in. The governance documents could specify certain groups that get to, like we do now with ICANN, could specify certain groups that get to select members to be put on the board for PTI. And by that means, PTI, which would have its own purpose statements, et cetera, would be, acting in accordance with those, and ICANN, if it, quote-unquote, went rogue, wouldn't be able to exert too much control or undue influence on PTI.
Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, and just, I'd like to add here, this is a bit premature to discuss this. We haven't really come to this part of the discussion yet, so we're trying to kind of look at the accountability on the contract issue and not as much the PTI board. That's going to be dealt with later. Thank you.
Okay, Lisa, fair point. I mean, that is something where I guess that's one of the critical questions here is it will the community will we be satisfied with our post-transition structure and the accountability in it? Will that be sufficiently met by the new ICANN accountability plus the contract between ICANN and the post-transition IANA such that it is not necessary to build in additional accountabilities at the PTI level, given that that will add another layer of complexity that we'll need to then deal with? Okay, let's park that for the moment and go to Donna, who's been patiently waiting. Donna.
Thanks, Jonathan. Donna Austin. So I guess this is a question that relates to the contract. So currently we have the contract between NTIA and ICANN, and within that there are SLAs. This contract, and I'm not sure whether I understand this correctly or not, but there would be a contract. So there's a separate legal entity that is established under ICANN, and then there's a contract between ICANN and that entity that would cover off SLAs and those types of things. I'm just trying to understand in my mind whether we're talking, I guess I got a little bit confused that we're potentially, we have a contract to create a separate entity, but I think this is a contract between the separate entity and ICANN itself. And within that contract, we would have SLAs. But in starting to go through my mind, the complication as I see it is how do you take into account it will be the CSC that actually monitors those SLAs or performance requirements, and how does manage upward to the ICANN board? I'm just trying to get this in my mind because the current arrangement is between two entities, and it's NTIA that monitors the performance. But in this arrangement, it will be a little bit more complicated, and there will be other entities involved in that monitoring of performance. So I'm just trying to understand how that would work.
So Donna, at a philosophical level, clearly we want to make this as simple as we reasonably can. My understanding, and I see Sharon's hands up, so I'll defer to her in just a moment, is that we have constructed a legal entity with whom ICANN can contract to perform the functions, the IANA functions, including having an SLA, which is one element of the contract that the CSC would monitor. Sharon?
Yeah, so I think Don, I think you are thinking about it the right way. I mean, it's IANA would be the service provider, you know, in effect to ICANN, and then ICANN would have obligations, and then ICANN would need to decide if the services were being met, if the levels were being met. Now, how ICANN decides that decision could certainly involve the CSC, and that could be mandated in the governance documents as a fundamental bylaw that CSC is tasked by ICANN with review of service levels and is the function being performed adequately. And then CSC reports up to ICANN, and then you follow that same chain that I described for periodic review function could be followed for the CSC work. It's CSC sends it up to the ICANN board. ICANN board either agrees or disagrees. If it agrees, that's fine. If it disagrees, it goes up to the multi-stakeholder group for a potential veto.
Just a follow-up question, if that's okay.
Yes, Donna, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. So does the ICANN board in that situation, or does ICANN in that situation, what control, if any, does it have over the CSC?
So I would view the CSC, while technically maybe tasked by or contemplated by the ICANN governing documents, just like the SOs are or the ACs are. So while it's a creature of ICANN governance, it is making recommendations to ICANN, and because of the ultimate accountability, in some respects, the CSC is directing directing, you know, the, what needs to happen at the IANA entity. So it is a group committee task force of ICANN, but ultimately through the accountability mechanisms at the top level, there is a need to respond, a need by ICANN to respond to the CSC work and ensure that the community is satisfied that that is being implemented properly.
Thank you, Sharon. It's Lisa for the record. I think it's a very important point that you're making here, and that links up to the accountability team's work on how the ICANN board is responsible to the community. And I think that's ultimate also the answer to Stefan Johnson's is ICANN just assuming the former role of NTIA. No, it's not. We're actually creating a new role, and you have a new CSC is going to play a different role than the NTIA did, but still having the oversight of part of the contract. So I think it's not assuming the NTIA's role. Thank you.
Yeah, Lisa, Chris is next, so let's go to Chris after that. Go ahead, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you, Jonathan. I want to take us back to basics because I think we're in danger of losing sight of our goals here. Those of us who favoured the internal model set up sort of the structure of that on the basis that there would be a series of escalation mechanisms that would be in the hands of the CSC, there would be a review mechanism, all of the stuff that we've talked about. And one of the reasons why we favoured the internal mechanism, one of the reasons, was because there was a feeling amongst us that if you passed control outside of ICANN, then that created the gaps that Larry Strickling referred to when he was talking about how would you manage accountability and so on. Now, the introduction of having an affiliate, a subsidiary with a separate legal contract, has distinct advantages to me personally as somebody who favors the internal model. And those specific advantages are, one, that there is a contract, and you can write into the contract things like the service level expectations or the service level agreements. And secondly, one has done the work of separating out the assets, et cetera, so that in the future, should the option to move the function somewhere else be exercised by whatever mechanism we agree, the vast majority of the work to make that happen has been done. What I'm concerned about is that in discussing this model of having a separate entity as a subsidiary of ICANN with a contract, we're in danger of losing sight of the advantages of the internal mechanism. And one of those advantages is that we can rely upon the internal accountability mechanisms of ICANN, be they IANA-specific built by us, by the CWG for the purposes of dealing with IANA-specific problems, and or be they the greater mechanisms being put together by the CCWG, such as spilling the board. And I'm concerned that we are massively overcomplicating this by trying to build a PTI that is, in effect, going to be exactly the same as what ICANN would be doing, and therefore having to create those mechanisms all over again, which defeats the whole purpose, in my view, of A, having the internal model, and negates the advantages of having a subsidiary where you have a contract and you have the ability to do the work of possible future separation now.
Well, thanks, Chris. I mean, that's an important point. And I don't think I think you're kind of warning us of a potential danger, and I think it very much helps to bring us back to the potential elegance of the model and make sure that we don't go down the route of adding any unnecessary complications, and we test at any time whether what our desired outcome, our motivation for recourse, whether that is met by the currently proposed structure. One very small detail where I don't think I disagree with you, but just to make sure we're clear on that, you talked about IANA-specific accountability mechanisms. I guess, although they might be being derived from this group, many of those will be passed on to the CCWG, and that's we're building a list over these 2 days, and we intend to transmit those requirements to the CCWG as they've repeatedly asked us to in detail. So I take your point that there will be IANA-specific or points related to this group, but in many instances we'll expect to sort of contract with the CCWG to provide us those services. But I think you're right. Let's make sure we don't build in any, and that's my mantra, is that we shouldn't build in any layers that don't serve a specific purpose or function that isn't covered by something else, for example, in this case, that can't be incorporated in the contract. Alan?
Thank you very much. I have a lot of the same worries as Chris did, and interestingly, for completely different reasons. I believe if we do functional separation properly, that is, we put the delineations in so that we can identify what's IANA and what isn't, and what is shared and what isn't, and that includes both physical infrastructure and people and whatever, we have done enough so that should future separation be necessary, I don't envision the kind of battles that the lawyers have said would come up at that point at a time of unrest. So I don't believe the legal separation really is a major enhancement on the physical separation for future separation should it be needed. Also, I don't believe the existence of a contract changes things. I've spent a lot of my life managing internal organizations, and the lack of a contract does not mean there are not well-defined expectations and well-defined processes and things like that between different parts of the internal entity. And my question before was the trigger one for me. In the worst case scenario of bankruptcy being forced on ICANN, might this protect the IANA function? And the answer is maybe yes. But I really worry that to get that level of protection, we're starting to build a relatively complex and messy organization to provide that. So I'm worried about how I ticked off legal separation in the poll, but I'm starting to worry that it's becoming a rat hole. Thank you.
Alan, I think we have to be mindful of that point. You articulated it well, and it's clear. I'm not yet worried that we are making something sufficiently overcomplicated, or it's that much of a rat hole. And I'll note Chris's point to the small advantage of a contract, which was something which we discussed earlier. I don't know if there are any other responses to that theme, bearing in mind that where we are at the moment is doing a deeper dive into the legally separated variant, and Alan brings us back to the point of reminding us that he hasn't let go of the functional separation. So I'm open to any other comments or points around that. I suppose the other point I'm mindful of is twofold. But really, the other point I'm particularly mindful of is that it's that one I made earlier about can you live with, if you happen to be, this isn't your optimal solution, is it a tolerable solution? And in the end, there will have to be some give and take. So whilst that point that Alan makes well about some advantages to an internal model, maybe that there's sufficient numbers in the group who feel unwilling to live with a internal model with only functional separation. If we do go down the legal separation, the next logical point to talk about, which seems to cascade very neatly, and Greg actually flagged it a moment ago in the chat, we will need to discuss item Just checking the number here on the, it happens to be number one of the punch list, which is, having described the structure we did, which is a PTI enveloped in a subsidiary or affiliate structure with a contract between itself and ICANN, the other entities we've talked about, the CSC, the PRF, and so on. The question is, what about the board of such an entity, and does the board have a unique function, or given the level of accountability that is now in the newly engineered ICANN, if you like, or reorganized or improved accountability ICANN, what role is there for a PTI board? I wonder if there are any comments or thoughts on that. Well, I'm going to say something which may or may not be provocative, but in the absence of any other hands going up, I'll venture a point. As I said, I've kind of blown my own mind and my own personal view a little on various directions on this. I'm very familiar with subsidiaries which have a largely which have in our what we would call here an ICANN board, members of the board made up of either of a combination of operational management and or directors of the parent corporation, and that's a subsidiary model I'm personally very familiar with, and in familiarity often breeds comfort. What I've heard from the group so far is that our requirements for holding the post-transition entity to account, for framing its performance in the form of a contract, for periodically reviewing it, and for ultimately potentially either for a series of ultimate potential sanctions, we have a sketch, something along the lines of what is indicated on page 3 of the Sidley memo that covers our requirements. So personally, I'm not hearing anything that persuades me that we need to go down the route of inserting a board with independence and with an additional layer of board capability in there. What I would say is, and this is really important, is the vehicle, the legal structure, creates the opportunity for that such a board to be created in future should it be required either within or without or as a separate entity. But right now, it appears that many of the problems or the motivations that are for solving issues are dealt with by other mechanisms. So having a limited board, a classic subsidiary board, seems to not cause me a problem. I'll defer now to the hands that have come up having said that, which is Chris, followed by Greg. Chris.
So, Jonathan, I agree with you. My support for a separate entity as a subsidiary is based on the principle that it is a subsidiary and that the board would be, as you have described, with the possibility that I would be quite comfortable with of having perhaps a couple of board members appointed by the customer base of IANA to the board, because I don't think that would be a harmful thing and may actually be a sensible thing. But your fundamental point, I'm in complete agreement with.
Thanks, Chris. Greg, are you responding to this or something new?
It's Greg Shatton. I'm responding to this as well. I think I agree with you. I think that if we have a smaller, less independent, or not independent, kind of an insider board is another term that's used for what you're you're getting at, that certainly leads us away from the rat hole of the robust multi-stakeholder board that itself could go rogue, or at least rogue differently from ICANN itself, wholly owned subsidiaries or controlled affiliates don't have to have boards that are prepared to charge off in different directions, and really only need to be minimal to satisfy statutory requirements for the board to exist. So there's a certain intoxication with the idea of using the subsidiary board as a second or as an additional accountability mechanism, as an additional community empowerment mechanism, at the same time that opens up a lot of additional choices and additional work. Not that we should avoid work if it's good work, but it certainly, it adds a layer of complexity, and the question is whether that really is giving us something that we don't get any other way, and that gives us, a structure that is less prone to some of the foibles of the current structure. So it's really a matter of trying to decide whether there's something truly worthwhile in creating more of an arm's length multi-stakeholder board that would need more governance and more decisions to be made around it. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. I'll just note a comment reflecting that if we did start to build out a board, we should be mindful of the fact that this is a post-transition entity, not just names. Sharon, go ahead.
So it sounds like what I'm hearing is there's a desire to avoid additional complexity if it can be avoided, and that would argue for keeping the PTI board as more of the insider board, as it was described. And I think that will work if it's really just more of kind of satisfying the legal administrative requirements. I'll point out one place where having an insider board might leave a little bit of a gap, and that is if the contract between ICANN and IANA has an aspect of it that is to allow for lawsuits for breaches of the contract. And I know that seems like an unlikely outcome, but let's just say that for the sake of argument that that's a remedy that people would want to see, then I think it is a little hard to envision that an insider PTI board is going to take steps that would involve suing ICANN, which is probably the employer of the people sitting on the board. Now, that gap, I think, can be addressed through the work of the periodic review function and the CSC, because those groups will be coming in and reviewing the performance of the contract and making those recommendations up the chain to ICANN and then ultimately to the multi-stakeholder member group. So I think there's another way at it. I just wanted to point out for completeness that is the one place you would be giving something up in terms of just having more of a true insider board. Thanks.
Thanks, Sharon. Lisa, did you want to make a comment, and then I'll come in?
Yes. Well, I just want to make a short comment regarding the public comments and also some of the feedback we've gotten from the community is that an actual solution that we choose has to be as simple as possible, lightweight, and not too complex. And also that, well, during the public comment, we're not detailed enough in our proposal, so we need to have that delicate balance of finding a model that covers as much of the needs we're having as a naming community and at the same time not making things too complex. Thank you.
Okay, Lisa. It feels to me like a principle, whether or not it's exactly what's elucidated in our formal principles of the group, is emerging, and that is to say, we shouldn't introduce something that isn't necessary. So it feels to me that if this becomes necessary in further discussion, that's a different point. But right now, we need to fully explore whether the other structures that are in place, CSC, PRF, ICANN board accountability, contract, meet the needs of the group. To the extent that they don't, we need to work at improving them. And to the extent that they can't, then we reconsider the need for beefing up, if you like, that board. That feels to me where this is going. It's not doesn't close it off completely because there's some but in the event that we do, we'll need to consider the composition of that board from more than just from the question is what is the composition of that board, but it does open up all sorts of other points as many have pointed out. So yeah, I'll stick to what I said a moment ago. Alan.
Thank you very much. A question. On the bits I did hear yesterday, there was discussion of two options for a legally separated IANA. One was the corporation with the board. The other was with an LLC. And I admit I didn't fully understand that and didn't hear the whole part of the talk. Is the LLC still on the board? Still on one of the considerations, and does that simplify any of the things we've been talking about today?
Alan, it is not off the table. It exists as a question. I'm question 7 on the punch list. What Lisa and I discussed in trying to simplify the discussion was to put that aside. Well, certainly subject to deciding whether we were going to go down the route of a separate legal entity or not. But the other advice we received was that's more of a subtlety. Either could accommodate our requirements, but it's not a necessary condition to know that to deal with almost everything we have to deal with, which is why we were keen to set that aside as not a primary gating factor. Sharon, feel free to add to that. I did see your hand flash up and down. You may feel that I gave sufficient information there, but if you would like to add, by all means, come in.
Yeah. Jonathan, just for clarification, the reason I raised it is a lot of our concern seems to be focusing on the board aspects. So if the LLC is a similar variation without that problem or without that complexity, that's why I raised it now. Thank you.
Okay, so Alan, to the best of my knowledge, the considerations that we were talking about with the board are those considerations, the conversation we've just had is independent of whether it's an LLC largely independent of whether it's an LLC or not-for-profit, but I'll defer to the lawyers.
Yeah, I got a different impression yesterday, so thank you.
Sharon?
Yeah, so I think, Alan, you're right in the sense that LLCs provide a much greater degree of flexibility, so you don't even need to have a board at an LLC. It could just be member-managed, just managed by ICANN. But I don't think it solves the more philosophical question, which is what is the level of governance and accountability you want at the PTI level? So I think whether it's an LLC or it's a nonprofit corporation, that still needs to be addressed or determined.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I think that gives us a position then to start to move. I mean, I'm conscious we've probably got 25 minutes, and we could probably make a little bit more progress on other elements of the punch list, although we've made very good progress, better than I might have expected. I hope that's not just because you're all very tired. But certainly we could go into, I think, area 10 might be one we could consider next. But let's hear from you, Chuck, if you want to add something.
Thanks, Jonathan. And by the way, I'm fine with going to 10, but to maximize our chances for getting closer towards a possible consensus position in our last call today. It seems to be that it would be helpful if we can somehow between now and 2 hours from now come up with a condensed version of what we have in front of us with a lot of the thoughts kind of compared side by side, maybe for the two models functional versus the legal separation. We took the poll, and I'm not advocating taking another poll right now. If we did, I'm not sure we would be any closer. We could be, it could be more split based on what I've heard. You know, the first a large part of our early conversations were in favor of the of having a contract and the legal separation, and more recently we've been talking about the need to avoid complexity and the internal, functional separation only model. So I guess what I'm suggesting, what I'm asking is, what can we create between now and our meeting in 2 hours and 25 minutes to maybe help us all look at what has happened in this meeting, and I agree with you that it's been very productive, so that we can help put it all together in our heads and maybe get closer to one direction than the other than we were when we took the poll an hour or so ago.
So, Chuck, I'm grappling with that a little bit, and I'll need yours or someone else's help, because what I think we did at the outset was, you're right, we took a poll relatively early on in order to take a route on either direction of in and around nine, legal or functional separation. It's clear that there was a decent portion of the group, a substantial fraction, that were either not committed to legal separation or undecided, but in excess of 40% in that position. But if you remove the undecideds, you had a pretty clear direction to at least explore in detail the legal separation, which we've gone on to do. I guess another way of looking at it might be to test whether, having explored the detail of that legal separation and trying I can certainly see how what I thought you were going to ask for is some form of summary of where we got to. I feel we could do that, and we could even go further and take some sort of poll and see whether views have shifted during the course of this call. Or we could prepare a summary for the start of the next call. And what we haven't done in a structured a way, it's kind of been implicit, but what we haven't done in as structured a way is explore the issues of the other internal variant, that is to say, without legal separation. It's been there throughout as a thread. So I don't know that a table or cross-comparison emerges, but maybe someone else can help me see the wood for the trees on that one and see if there is a realistic way of doing it. Or it feels like we're in a good place as far as exploring the detail in and around the legal separation. My sense was that for some they got sufficient detail that made them more comfortable, but I don't know how those that were in the functional separation, apart from Alan who spoke up, I don't know how others feel, whether they feel they've now got greater confidence, having had greater detail on legal separation, or are more firmly entrenched. So it's challenging. I'm not quite sure what Lisa or others in the group think, if there's a way forward. And I'll just pause for people to think a moment. So, Donna, your hand's gone up, having had a moment to think. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. So I guess it's just an observation that while there were 50%, more than 50% in the poll that were leaning towards legal separation, you still had 21% undecided. So if you put functional and 21 and the undecided together, you still, I kind of think that there seems to be some logic to having some discussion around the functional as well, because then you know what you're comparing the two things to. I don't know. I mean, we've gone down the route of having a discussion about subsidiary, but you know, where are the commonalities with the functional separation, and where are the big differences? I think there's value in doing that. We're that close to it now. If there's some way to get that discussion, it would be useful, I think.
Donna, thanks. That's a good point. So just to a couple of quick things. One, I did recognize, obviously, that there were 40% who weren't, more than 40% who weren't in favor of the legal at that outset. But we must be very careful with that. It was a straw poll of those on the call at that point. It was to give us a direction to go down and develop in more detail. That said, we have just under 20 minutes, and it seems like a perfectly sensible suggestion for anyone having heard the discussion to speak for or against functional separation. But instead of all the discussion being focused on legal, and perhaps in and around those points we've discussed, to try and flesh out, you know, someone might, for example, be prepared to say, well, at the outset I voted for functional, and I feel much more strongly that that is the case now, or having heard all of the discussion, which has touched on both, I'm much more satisfied with what's being proposed. So, you know, let's have a discussion around that and hear from others how this discussion has left them feeling. It's not quite as systematic as going through it in exactly the same way, but it certainly permits the opportunity to air the thoughts about internal model, functional separation, having gone in detail through internal model, legal separation. Chris?
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm prepared to nail some of my colours to a mast. I voted undecided. Having listened to everything, on the proviso that we end up with what you described as an internal board or a true subsidiary board, and subject to the possibility of having some customer representation on that board, and on the I'm persuaded that there are some distinct advantages to having in place a contract, and I'm persuaded that the work of creating the subsidiary, separating out the stuff that would be IANA were it to be spun off at a later stage, is valuable, because doing so at the end of a crisis and having to work out amongst ourselves and to reform, shall we say, a group to figure out how to do that may not be sensible. So on that basis, and on the basis that we are not going to create a whole heap of new accountability mechanisms, but rely on the accountability escalation mechanisms that the design teams are working on, which I call the IANA-specific accountability mechanisms, and the overarching ICANN accountability mechanisms, I would be prepared to move my vote from undecided to the concept of having a subsidiary.
Thanks, Chris. That's helpful and constructive thinking. I just want to not refer too much as a vote. We took a poll of those on the call, and you know, you've clearly indicated a shift in thinking, and that's useful.
I changed my poll.
A shift in thinking. All right. Any other comments along those lines? It'd be really good to hear from people, you know, either advocates of functional separation or, you know, Chris did a great job there, I felt, of summarizing what he was uncomfortable with, what changed, what he got comfortable with, and why he's supportive of a position at the moment. If anyone else has got similar types of views and thoughts, it'd be great to hear them. Olivier?
Thanks very much, Jonathan. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. And I also was undecided, and I still am grappling with a couple of questions that are going around my mind, the primary one being the accountability of the PTI board. And I understand that there is an option of having an insider board, which would therefore make sure that the accountability of the PTI board would be closely linked to the ICANN accountability. But the core concern I have is if we are in a situation where ICANN sues PTI or something breaks between ICANN and PTI, how would this work? The PTI board at that point is not covered by ICANN accountability unless I'm mistaken. So I'm not sure. I'm still undecided. All right.
Okay, Olivia, thanks. Fair point. Sharon's put up in her hand, so I'll go straight to her.
So to answer the question, if ICANN sues PTI, what would happen? I think if the PTI board is largely an insider board, they still have duties to the PTI entity, so arguably they would need to respond in the interest of PTI, but let's just assume that for some reason they're not able to. They're serving two masters, and that's too difficult. I think what you'd need to do then to address that is, again, have some mechanism like the CSC or the periodic review function that would spring into action and then require some action by the PTI or by ICANN. So you'd have to have some external source putting that pressure on, external meaning not the board, putting that pressure on the PTI to act and defend the suit.
Thanks, Sharon. And I just, there was one other point that occurs to me, and that's that, of course, I've been thinking personally about, you know, what that board could, having created the capability to have a board, that board could change in its remit quite substantially in a future scenario, and, you know, in a spun-off scenario or any other myriad future potential scenarios. And one thing we should be aware of is, on the back of yesterday's discussion, the review group, DTN, recommended a review after 2 years. So there is a relatively short order comeback on all of this, and you could imagine that an IANA review team after 2 years might say, great, this is all working well, congratulations to that fantastic CWG, or, you know, everything's working well, but we think you need a more robust PTI board. So we're not closing the door forever. I just remind people that this isn't locking down a structure forevermore, but we are trying to get a decent, coherent proposal that people can live with and that stands up on its own 2 feet for the moment. Eduardo?
Jonathan, thank you so much. This is a wonderful record. Here I'm going to talk about the functional separation, and by the way, the discussion that we have had so far is very enlightening and very interesting. You know, the way I see this, I remember, I don't remember, two meetings ago, yesterday or before, that the function that ICANN is doing now, the IANA function that ICANN is doing now, it can be put in a functional division with their own budget, their own people, and you know, with all the items that you need to as far as you can go to separate it in the future if it's necessary. So what I hear now with affiliates, it boils down that there is a contract that will be easier to understand. And, you know, when I look at it, you know, if we do a functional division within ICANN and you have SLAs in place, what I see is the CSC being a PTI board type like board in that sense. So, you know, that's my point of view, if anybody wants to comment. Thank you.
Thanks, Eduardo. That's helpful and an interesting perspective on seeing the role of the PTI the role of the CSC in its sort of keeping things in check, which of course it does, as do other critical elements of this emerging proposal. Alan?
Thank you. My understanding or presumption maybe was the IANA we're talking about is the complete IANA performing all of the functions. And I don't think that would sit really well having the two-thirds of it responsible for the IETF standards parameters and the RIR data to be overseen by a board which is largely registries. Somehow I think that might not sit well.
I haven't heard anyone say the board is registries, to be clear.
Well,
this is either the discussion has been centered around whether it's a, if you like, a diverse board or a insider board, and that's really the crux of the point.
The last comment I just heard was CSC, which I thought we decided is to a large extent the direct customers.
Yeah, that was nothing to do with CSC being a board. It was just in response to Eduardo saying that he felt the CSC had a role in keeping. You know, my understanding of what he said was he said the CSC, he was more comfortable with an insider board given the role of the CSC in keeping the performance of the IANA function on check. It was that was the way I interpreted or understood his comment.
Perhaps I misunderstood.
This is Eduardo. Jonathan is correct. Thanks.
My apologies.
Thank you, Eduardo. All right. Well, I'm not seeing a whole lot of other hands. I realize this isn't an absolutely conclusive discussion, but it has been a very fruitful and actually quite substantial discussion. And I'm minded to say we put a hold on things now and just absorb what's been covered. I do understand Chuck's point earlier about trying to do some sort of comparison, and I'll talk with Lisa and see if we can do something there. And Olivia, your most recent point about stress test scenarios for this, and I think that's exactly right. I mean, certainly this structure, this emerging nascent structure that's coming out, will certainly have to be subject to the stress tests. And in my thinking, what happens is, if you see sufficient gaps emerging, that in this very specific example we're talking about now, the gap exists and could be fulfilled by a different a variant on the configuration of the board. Of course, there's many other ways in which a gap could be fulfilled, Well, then so be it. But nevertheless, at this stage, we have a relatively simple structure which seems to answer many of the questions being asked of us and by us, so that's attractive, and we haven't introduced a significant new layer of accountability, which all of the ramifications that produces. So very productive conversation, very helpful. Lisa, are you happy to call it a wrap at that stage?
I'm happy to call it. Well, I see that Olivier's head hurts. My hurts too. So I think we need a short break.
So the interests of stopping people's heads. So thank you very much, everyone. And I realize this is a very grueling session. And thank you in particular to those for whom this is substantially unsociable hours. I know that our colleagues at Sidley, at least Sharon, is pulling an all-nighter, as they say, and I suspect others of you have already done so. So wherever you are, from Australia to the west coast of the United States, somewhere in between, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you in a couple of hours.